Well, hello there, ladies and gents. Great to see you again. Welcome back to Your Money and a Cup of Joe. Ryan Ruff here, your moderator. But as always, I've got Joe Kaleo standing by, joining me in just a moment. We're going to be getting into another wealth management related discussion. And today we're going right back to a topic that we know so many of you guys enjoy us covering, and that's another one of our market recaps. So today we're going to be analyzing, you know, really quarter three in this market recap, looking at kind of what the first 9 months of the trading year, now that they're complete, what they've looked like, and then of course what we anticipate as we move here into quarter four of 2024. But before we get into the good stuff, let's go ahead and say hi to the man of the hour. Joe, good to see you today. How you doing?
Ryan, doing great. Good to see you. What's happening? We've got a lot to talk about. Shall we dig into it?
Yes, please. And why don't we just start high level kind of stuff? Economic trends is always a good place to start. What are you guys seeing and looking into on your end with regard to these?
Ryan, one of the things that we hear about occasionally, but not look at a lot, are rail shipments. Why? Because that's a sign of economic growth or slowing down. And right now, Ryan, one of the things that has surprised us so far is that rail shipments continuously be up month over month, year over year. It's been consistent right through the second and the third quarter on a year over year basis. It is a sign of future economic activity. So that is something that we've seen very positively happening behind the scenes. Ryan, second, the PCE, Personal Consumption Expenditures Index. It's a sign of inflation, if you will. And when you take out food and energy, it's closely watched by the Federal Reserve. Well, Ryan, it rose 0.1% from the prior month during August, which was below expectations of 0.2%. and below the 0.2% reading seen in July. So what does that mean? The prior year, prices had rose 2.7% in August, which was matching expectations, versus 2.6 in July. So it was only up 2.2%. So it was the lowest annual increase since February of 21. That's telling us inflation may be moderating, right? Which we've been hearing about. And unemployment rates have gradually been drifting higher over the past few months. And the Fed cut rates 50 basis points or 0.5%, right? They did that in early September. Now the debate is on whether they will cut 25 or 50 basis points in November, yet to be seen if they even do it at all, right? So there are mixed messages within the economy over the past 3 months. And so it's going to be interesting to watch and see what happens.
Sure thing. And Joe, one of the hottest topics right now is, well, it's an election that's right around the corner from us. What do you guys see this doing or maybe not doing to the markets?
Yeah, the markets do not like uncertainty, and the presidential race is close. It's within the margin of error, meaning it could still go either way. So historically, markets fall leading up to and in an election year, especially the last 2 months, especially without a clear vote leader. That's what we have right now. So the path to 270 electoral votes goes through the following states: Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Both sides are viewing Pennsylvania as a crucial state. As of now, the Senate is leaning Republican. The House is leaning Democratic. So no matter which way the presidential vote goes, the market generally likes gridlock between the parties, and that means they have what's necessary for them to get just the absolute important legislation passed. So that's really important. Now, I will note two of those five states have been hit by hurricanes in the third quarter. So it is going to be interesting to see, does that play a role in the election? Now, let's come back. What does the election do or mean for investments? Well, portfolio construction is best treated as an apolitic exercise, right? So meaning take the politics out of it somewhat. Don't let who you wanted to win, if they don't win, influence your decision-making. Ride with it and know how they're going to influence economic decision-making.
All right. Thanks, Joe. We needed to touch on that here at the beginning of the show today, just because it is on everybody's mind with the election looming. Let's talk about the fun stuff. Let's talk about some of the winners now that we've noticed throughout the year. Joe, what are some of those big gains or the big winners here?
I think everybody'd be surprised if I told you utilities are the largest gainer for the first 9 months of the year, Ryan. That hasn't happened since 2014. Utilities are up 27% so far this year. They were up 24% for the whole year of 2014. So it is surprising to see utilities be the big gainer. Communication services and financials were also both up 20% plus since January 1st. So we're starting to see some of the normals, communication services, financials returning with the drop in interest rates. Ryan, I think what really is a little surprising for everyone is all the sectors were positive through the end of September, and energy was up the least, just 4%. So what was good at the end of June, maybe not as much at the end of September, and a little bit of vice versa.
Well, that's, I mean, always good to hear that all sectors are up, but I recall a conversation you and I, when we were doing, you know, one of these market recaps and talking through some things at the end of June. Like you mentioned, one item that we were talking about that was down was real estate. Any update on this front?
Yeah, it was the only sector down at the end of June. It was down 4.3%. It's now up more than 10% year to date. So that's a 16% turnaround in just the third quarter alone. And the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates, that made the headwinds turn to tailwinds for real estate. So ironically, that's made real estate certainly one of the most volatile sectors, being down the first 6 months and now up. And it's only behind large cap growth stocks over the last 1 year for best performance.
All right. Well, another area I want to shift to now, Joe, is bonds. And they had lost money, you know, the last 3 of 4 years. I think they were down when we last spoke in June. Where are they now? What do you see on your end?
Yeah, this is another thing that headwind turned to tailwind, right? When we recapped the second quarter, the Fed was still leaning towards cutting rates, but hadn't committed to it. And that would help bonds. Well, sure enough, that has done so. Now, it was about split between bonds, the various types of bonds in the second quarter. Most were still slightly negative for the first 6 months. Some were negative in the second quarter. Some were positive. All have turned positive in the third quarter. Almost all are positive at the end from a year-to-date basis. And like real estate, the cutting of rates have just turned that around for them.
I want to shift now over to technology, which is just such a hot topic, especially given the AI boom. You know, we had a lot of conversations at the beginning of the year surrounding AI. Give me an update on what you're seeing with regard to technology, and then, of course, how AI is playing a role in things these days.
Yeah, Ryan, tech stocks delivered strong returns in the first and the second quarter, driven by AI. And then within global tech, semiconductors posted the strongest returns. So as we break that down, we still forecast global tech earnings to grow by 20% throughout the whole year, and that AI memory sector revenues will rise 55% this year, 35% next year. Now, some of those stocks have cooled off since July 1st, and the market was just asking, could AI not be returning profits as quickly as stocks grew? But that just continued to say, all right, maybe they're not going to grow quite as fast as we expected, but they're still generally growing. So what do we see within tech and AI? So we see opportunities in both large and small tech companies. The sheer growth of AI as a whole will mean that many investors are still under allocated overall. People keep thinking, well, didn't I miss it? No, we've talked about this, Ryan, and I'll repeat it in case if they missed it. At the beginning of the year, we see this as the best subsector over the next 10 years. So what do we see? What are we looking at? We favor semiconductor companies that are powering the AI data center infrastructure and some of their chips. So all of these mega cap tech with chips, cloud, and generative AI models exposure are the areas that I think you want to focus. But not only within tech, but I like to call it cross currents, right? We see economic cross currents being influenced by AI. What do we mean by that? Let's unpack this a little bit. OpenAI and other tech leaders shared a document with government officials outlining the economic and national security benefits of building a 5-gigawatt data center in various U.S. states. Now, Ryan, to put that into context, 5 gigawatts is roughly the equivalent of 5 nuclear reactors or enough power to power 3 million homes. That's a lot, right? Now, OpenAI is reportedly aiming 5 to 7 5-gigawatt data centers. So OpenAI had gone to the Biden administration and they said that essentially the build out would create tens of thousands of new jobs. It's also going to increase the GDP and ensure that the U.S. can maintain its lead in AI development. So it's important to build out the infrastructure to then create the opportunities, right? And the build out alone would then create jobs and increase the economy. Now, also, Bain and Company, right, they've estimated that the AI market could be near $1 trillion in just 3 years. They estimate that the market, including artificial intelligence-related services and hardware, will grow 40 to 55% annually from $185 billion last year, leading to revenue of somewhere around $800 billion to $1 trillion in 2027. That's a lot of money, Ryan. That's tremendous growth. That consulting firm, Bain and Company, they said that upstream chip component demand, such as integrated circuit design and related IP, could increase over 30% per year through 2026, and data center costs could rise from $1 to $4 billion now to $10 to $25 billion in 5 years. Keep that in mind. That's all growing as their capacity expands from 50 to 200 megawatts to over 1 gigawatt. So they also noted the potential of shortages for semiconductors, PCs, and smartphones. So there could be pent-up demand when everybody thinks, have we missed it? No, no, there's still lots of opportunity. So there's also the FTC. They need to crack down on the bad actors. Five companies using AI in deceptive ways. The FTC announced actions against five companies that they said artificial intelligence in deceptive and unfair ways. They wanted to cut it out. So one claimed to provide automated legal services, while another offered a feature to generate fake product reviews.
I mean, well, look, Joe, I appreciate you breaking that down. There's a lot to unpack on the technology and AI side. And before we leave it and dive into some of the other areas that we typically hit on these market recaps, I want to kind of have you double click one layer further. You know, you mentioned earlier this idea of cross currents. How and where do you see AI influencing other areas of the overall economy?
So, Ryan, we just talked about the 5 to 75 gigawatt power plants that we would need, right? There are estimates that it takes 10 times the computing power to do an AI search compared to a previous search. So there was an announcement a few weeks ago that the former Three Mile Island was going to become a single source energy provider. Well, that will provide energy to one tech company. That is a tech company on the verge of expanding just their own AI output. They needed all the energy from Three Mile Island to do it. Now, it's not come online yet, but that's the kind of activity that has propelled utilities to be up 27% just through the end of September. So that's why I say cross current, because AI is now powering utilities, if you will, right? And utility isn't the only sector or even subsector that's benefiting. Technology equipment makers and providers are also winning. And chip makers certainly are in tech, and they're not slowing down either. But then when you talk about equipment makers that are making the monitors or the meters, those aren't in tech, but they're supporting the tech expansion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's no doubt there's a ripple effect there, Joe. So thanks for unpacking that one for me. I want to circle back now to real estate for a hot second before we move into other kind of sectors of the economy. Is there a rebound on the way when it comes to real estate?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know that we have enough data in yet to tell us. So private real estate investments have faced both economic and structural headwinds in recent years, certainly. I mean, that would be the headline, if you will. Well, real estate values were certainly weakened by the swift monetary tightening that hurt valuations and made debt servicing more expensive. That was the first part. The second, though, as well, is people just haven't been as quick to return to the office in many locations as they were pre-COVID. So that's a second component of that. Rental incomes, though, on older properties in less appealing locations, they just may not have kept pace with inflation, especially for assets that aren't meeting some green building standards. So when you factor all that in and more remote working since the pandemic, and the rise of e-commerce. That has hurt weaker parts of both the office and the retail sector. Ryan, this is something that may take 3 to 5 years to fully shake out and see if it's going to overcome as a weak recession or something more dramatic.
Okay, good to know. We'll certainly keep our eye on that as new data certainly becomes available. But Joe, we often talk about consumer spending during these market recaps, not just because it's how we contribute to the economy overall, but when we look at consumer spending, it also gives us kind of a snapshot, if you will, on the overall health of the economy. So what do you guys see with regard to consumer spending? Where are we stacking up these days?
Yeah, I break it down into three areas of interest. The overall retail market, leisure entertainment, and home construction. So through the end of September, retail was up 3.75%, 7.75%. Right. And it was down for the first 6 months of the year with the economy expected to be slowing down. So like real estate, retail did have a nice rebound in the third quarter. Now, even though retail has recovered, there's still hints of revenge vacation spending. Right. We've talked about this a little bit. Right. Dynamic leisure and entertainment was also strong. So here, let's think of cruise lines, hotels, airlines, live entertainment, and even camping, if you will, Ryan. This subsector of it was up 14% in the month of September alone, right? Especially after interest rates got cut. So there, we're starting to see some positives come back. Finally, let's go back to home construction. Also negative at the end of the second quarter. Now up nearly 25% in just the third quarter alone. Here, you've got your big winner for the months of July, August, and September.
I like it. Well, Joe, before we wrap up today's market recap, I want to circle back to a big winner that we've seen in the past few years, and that was energy. To kind of put a cherry on the top of the conversation today, how's energy faring these days?
Ryan, this one's interesting because while it has been the big winner the past few years, it was up 8% 3 months ago. And historically, heading into an election, it's often weaker. And sure enough, the sector was only up 4% at the end of September. So this was one of the weak spots in the third quarter, but it's not surprising. Why? Because it goes back to one of the topics in our chat here today, because it depends on which way the presidential election falls. If the Democrats win, energy may get hurt. If Republicans win, it may get buoyed and take off a little further. So those are some of the areas that we see how energy could sway depending upon the final result. Even if we have gridlock between the House and the Senate, you could see energy improve. I want to go back though, Ryan, we said it before and we'll say it again. Even if your candidate doesn't win, there's always opportunities to make money in the market. It's just where. And positioning within the market is very important. So don't, I've had a few of these conversations, not many, but I've had a few where people say, shouldn't I just get out of the market? No, just think about how you're positioned and where you should go in the future.
Joe, I'm so glad that you mentioned that because let's take that point, put it on a shelf for a hot second. But we've thrown a lot of information about trends and what we've been seeing, not just throughout the first 9 months of the year, but what we're thinking might continue forward here as we finish out the year with the election looming. So when you bundle these two very important subsets of information together, I'm sure there's a lot of questions. I'm sure there's a lot of folks out there who are doing their due diligence, keeping an eye on things. Hey, they found themselves to this episode. Clearly, they're plugged in. They're interested in this conversation, but they probably have questions of their own. Joe, for anybody out there that would, you know, enjoy or benefit from a conversation with you and your team to talk through anything that we chatted about today with regard to where their portfolio is positioned, given some of these considerations, what would be the best way somebody could reach out, open up a dialogue, and talk to you and the team?
Yeah, Ryan, we've done more second opinions and conversations that I would say than we've done a long time here lately because people are a little nervous leading into the election. Give us a call, shoot us an email. Happy to have that chat because just something looking over your shoulder, it never hurts, right? And it doesn't hurt to have that second opinion, if you will, just saying, am I in a good place or what are your thoughts about this? Happy to do a review if that's helpful.
Perfect. Well, Joe, I know you've got clients to serve and some of those conversations to have later today. So I'll let you get back to doing that. But I appreciate you carving some time out to be with me and dive into the market recap today.
Thanks, Ryan. Good to see you.
Oh, good to see you as always, Joe. And folks, look, we're going to take a final moment as we typically do on this show. Thank you for making us a part of your day. If you enjoyed today's discussion, you learned a thing or two, benefited from the market recap, we'll make sure you hit subscribe on whichever platform you checked us out on today so that you don't miss out on future episodes where Joe and I dive into different wealth management discussions or periodically hit our market recaps as we did today. All of this information, it's meant for you. It's meant to provide you with some tips, some strategies, and some, you know, honest thought, if you will, surrounding your financial world. Before Joe, I'm Ryan. We're going to go ahead and say so long now, but we appreciate you stopping by and being with us on Your Money and a Cup of Joe. This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Financial Services Incorporated. UBS Financial Services Incorporated does not verify and does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of the information presented. This material is made available for use by CEG. Neither UBS Financial Services Incorporated nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review the PDF document at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, member SIPC. Joe Kaleo at Kaleo Wealth Management Group, UBS Financial Services Incorporated. Office address 200 West Highway 6, Suite 400 in Waco, Texas, 76712.